The interview was taken with Mr. Foy M. White of 316 West Market in Sitton, Texas. The interviewer was Reynaldo Contreras, and the first part of this tape was about his life during the Depression and his work in the oil industry.
At the time I went to work for the company, it was right in the throes of the Depression. Of course, you don't know about that because you're too young to know about the Depression. But there wasn't any possible way that you could find a job. And so I was, I read about jobs, road construction job in West Texas. That's how come that I went out there. And of course, as a kid, I grew up in Oklahoma. And I worked for the Gulf, of course, and I was a kid then. And, well, you know how kids are, because they don't have any scruples of jobs or finance or things like that. And of course, and I had a good job in the Gulf. I had a new automobile, and I had about almost $9,000 in cash. I had a lot of one day I thought, well, I don't know why that I'd be sitting around here all my life, because I might as well go out and have a little fun. So I quit, and I went off and fiddled around for about two or three months, and I got tired of that. So one day I said to my father, I think that I'll go get a job, because I told him I'm tired of fiddling around. He said, have you been reading the papers? I said, no, sir, not a great deal. And he said, well, I think you're going to be surprised. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, those companies are laying off men by the hundreds. And I said, they are. He said, they sure are. So I thought, well, I'll find out. Where I worked for the Gulf, of course, Seminole, Oklahoma was a boom town. And that's where I worked for. So I decided that I'd go back to the Gulf office, talk to that job. And the man that I've worked, he was the, I worked in the gas, in a gasoline plant. He was the gasoline superintendent. And the day I talked to him, he told me that they laid off 1,700 men the day before. Hmm. And of course, and I roamed all over the country. Well, from Cape Cod to Jericho in 2 years, and I worked 14 days. And of course, well, to tell you the truth, if I'd been greedy, I could have got rich, because my word, I had about $9,000 in cash, and that was more than a fortune at that time, see? And, the thing was, and I gave the most of it away, because the people, families and children were hungry and all of that stuff. I don't think, if I told you the truth, you wouldn't believe it, because it's just almost beyond your comprehension, because the people, the hundreds all over the country, and they were just on starvation. And of course, and I see those people, kids would be squalling for things to eat, and of course, and I'd spend money and buy groceries and things like that. But at any rate, I went out to West Texas, and the Continental had some production out there, and one of the companies, Roustabouts, and I was up there on the lease talking to him one day, and he told me, he pointed to me, there's a little place called Santa Rita, and there's where the Continental's office was. He told me, said, I tell you something, but you better not say anything about it. I said, what's that? And he pointed to that building. He said, the man that pushes the gang said he lived right next door to me. Said he told me last night that Monday, it was on Friday when I talked to this fellow. And he said that. And he told me that Monday that they were going to hire 10 men, extra men, for a while, because they had some extra work to do. And he said, you'll go over there. And he said, be down there early. I said, okay, I sure will. And I won't mention it. And sure enough, Monday morning I went down there, and my word is just a little after 6 o'clock. And And I just had to crowd my way in the door because the place was just plain full of men, you know, to see. And this pusher was sitting over there behind the desk in his office. And of course, I finally scrapped in there, and I was standing right by the door. And pretty soon, the superintendent came in, and this pusher asked him, he said, pardon me, he said, are we going to hire any of those men, these men today? He said, yeah. He said, we want 10 of them. He said that. And this pusher said, do you have any particular one in mind? He said, no. He said, just pick them and take them. And this pusher just looked around, and he started with me. He said, you, just pick that 10 men. And told him, he said, we'll run back of the office, and there'll be a truck around there in a few minutes, and you can go to this truck. So I worked with that outfit for a year, 12 days, and of course, and for some reason, the superintendent liked me, and the company wouldn't allow him to hire any regular men. And he told me that one day, I'd been working about 5 weeks, so he told me, of course, he works 6 days a week, work 9 hours a day. And we were working close to a place called Big Lake. And he came up there one Sunday afternoon, and he told me, he said, you know what I'm going to have to do? I said, no, sir, sure don't. He said, the company raises as much cane about me working you. He said, I'll have to lay you off. He said, I'll lay you off today. And he said, come back Monday. And he said, I'll hire you back again. I said, okay. So we did that for a long time. So finally, after about a year, I worked for him a year, 12 days, and he came out there one Friday, one Saturday afternoon, and he told me, he said, you know what you're going to have to do? I said, yeah, fair. And he laughed. He said, no. But he said, they've raised much cane with me. He said, I'm going to have to lay you off for 2 weeks this time. And I said, well, maybe that I can find another job. And he said, well, I don't wish you any bad luck, but I hope you don't, because he said, I think in a short time things will ease up and they let me hire you regularly. And he said, and I'd sure like to have you. And I said, well, I sure appreciate it. But in the meantime, I told him I left for another job. So,
yes, sir. Which company were you working for at this time?
Continental.
Continental, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I worked for Continental. And I went all over the country. I was at Midland and Odessa, Wink and Monahan's and Hobbs, and I was all over. So I came back. And it was on Brighton. And I was just driving through the company's camp for Ohio State, where the end was put up. And I thought, well, I never hit that outfit for a job, so I would stop and ask him for a job. And I went in their office, and there was a little guy out there in the front office, and of course there was a waiting lounge out there. And I asked him who done the hiring and firing around there. And he said, well, said Mr. Banks, said, do you have an appointment? I said, no, sir, I don't. And of course, I could see that Mr. Batter was vice president, general manager of the company. And his door was partly open, and he said, and this little guy told me, he said, that I don't think he can see now because he's busy. And I said, well, I'll just wait. And so I just sat down on a little lounge chairs and picked up the magazine. I looked at that magazine. About 5 minutes, and some guy came out of there, and of course, and Mr. Bauer called to that man. This little guy, of course, naturally, later, well, I'll probably acquaint with my new, his name is Jimmy Perry. And Mr. Bauer asked him, he said, who have you got out there, Jimmy? He said, I don't know, some boy wants to see you. He said, well, send him in. So I went in his office and introduced myself to him and told him what I wanted. And he said, well, he said, I'll tell you. He said, they haven't let me hire a regular man in more than 3 years. He said, we have 15 men that's working half time. He said, we did let them work half time in order to keep your families from going on. So I apologized to him for taking up his time or bothering him, and I was going to leave. And so, and of course, and he asked me, right, I told him what I'd been doing and how I'd been doing it. And of course, he knew the guy that I'd been working for. He said they were good friends. And and when I started to leave, and when I got the door, and he told me, he said, he called me, son. He said, just a minute, son. And I turned around and said, yes, sir. He said, okay. He said, I'll do something for you if you won't get mad at me. And I said, well, I'm going to get mad at you. What do you want to do? And he said, well, we'll have some new work start Monday. But he said, it won't, it'll take about 30 days. And he said, we couldn't possibly use you for more than 30 days. I said, well, that'll be fine, because I think within 30 days I can go back to work for Continental. He said, do you like that outfit? I said, yes, sir, I do. And the man that I work for, his name is Stout. And I said, and I like to work for Mr. Stout. And he said, yeah, I said, he's a good man. Yeah, and that. He said, and there was an engineering office right across the, well, just across the street. And he said, and he pointed, and that engine, the chief engineer was up there at the drawing desk, and he is making some maps. And he told me, he said, and he pointed through the window, he said, you see that man over there at that desk, at that map desk? I said, yes, sir. And he said, well, he's our chief engineer. He said, you will be assigned to him. If go over and get him to fix you up an employment card. He said, do you know where the hospital is? I said, yes, sir. I told him, I know the doctor, because I told him Dr. Walker was his name. I told him, he examined me when I went to work for Continental. And he said, well, you go to the hospital, get an examination. He said, the doctor will tell you whether or not that you can go to work. I said, thank you. And I went over. And I told this engineer, you know, I had quite a time convincing him that Mr. Barry had sent me over there. That's just how rough it was. See? And I went to the hospital. Dr. Walter was just fixing to go in the operating room, and Dr. Walter was a kind of a, he was a lot like Dr. Carcahan, and he was really a good doctor, and he was good at heart, but he talked pretty rough. And so when I went in there, and he looked at me, he said, what mail do you want? And I said, a physical examination, because I'm going to work with this outfit. He said, let me have that. He had his clothes on. And he just put them on the wall and signed it. So he said, you don't need an examination, because he said, it's been less than a year since I examined. And I said, okay, thank you. So I took it back and took it back to the engineer. And he showed me where to come Monday. And he said, you be there at 8 o'clock. I said, okay. So, and I worked with him. See, and we made some surveys and a whole bunch of stuff. And we were way out west of town, about 25, 30 miles. We was on a rank running some section lines. And well, I was keeping track of the time, and I thought, well, this is the tail. And when we were coming to town, and this man's name is Stale, this engineer. And of course, and I called him Mr. because I was a kid and he was a man. And I said, well, Mr. Stale, I told him, it sure been nice working with you fellas, because you sure got a good setup and a nice bunch of guys to work with. And in a few minutes, and he asked me, what in the world are you talking about? And I said, well, you know that Mr. Bear hired me. He said, yeah. And I said, well, he told me when he hired me that you couldn't possibly use me for more than 30 days. And I told him, and this is it. And he said, well, he said, if it'll be any consolation to you, he said, I've been intending to tell you, but I forgot it. He said, I'd only had you 1 week. He said, I went to the office. I got permission from Mr. Byer to wire the home office about you. And he said, they okayed it. He said, your job is study of mine. And I almost fell out of the car. About 3 months. I was in there about 3 months. And one day, I came out of the post office. It was in the afternoon. It was about this time in the afternoon. And I met Mr. Stellar. He was the superintendent for Continental. And he wanted to know where I'd been. And I told him that I was working for, I'm working for this outfit. And he said, well, he said, I tell you, he said, this is a good outfit to work for. But he said, I tell you, if the time comes that you're dissatisfied with the job and you want to come back over there, he said, don't go to anybody. He said, come to me. And he said, if you do, he said, if I don't have room for you, I'll find room. I said, well, I sure appreciate that. And So, well, it was a good setup. It was a good outfit, so I didn't do it. And so, in 1935, they transferred me here in about, I guess it was about, maybe 20 years. And one day I was, it was Saturday morning, and I was down in Corpus, and of course in the old Nueces Hotel was in operation. And when I went by the hotel, and here comes Stollard out of that hotel with this big punch, and I met him. And of course, if he recognized me right off, and I did him, and he wanted me to go back and have coffee. So we went back, and of course, his time was limited. And he's was a general, of course, he'd been gone from West Texas a long time, and he's over in Louisiana. He's a general production superintendent, because he has charge of everything west of the Mississippi. And when we were talking in the New Aces Hotel, he said, well, I guess that you're still with us. I said, yeah, still with Plymouth. And he said, well, he said, you remember what I told you at the post office that day about the job? I said, yes, sir. I sure did. Of course, that he was much older than I imagine. He's retired now. I'm sure he was. Mm-hmm. Or probably before now. And he said, well, the offer still goes. And I said, well, I still appreciate it, but I can't do that because, see, when you work for those companies like that, well, you have insurance, and you have annuity, you have savings, and you have all that stuff. You can't afford to cut loose from them because it costs you too much, see, because my word, at the time that I was talking to him, and if I'd have cut loose on that, it would have cost me $15,000 or $20,000 because I'd have lost that money, see, because you can't afford to. So that's what I did. And I worked for 37 years. Okay, that might be a pretty good deal, too. I had two minor accidents during those 37 years. I broke my little finger on my right hand. And one time, we were working well, and it was a misty, foggy morning, and I was on top of a Christmas tree. I slipped off the Christmas tree, and I had a hammer in my hand, and I dropped it, and there's some weeds around the well. And the hammer set up like that. And I slipped off the tree, I fell, and I hit. And I busted three ribs, and I hit the hammer out, and I broke three of the ribs, and of course, I was off 2 weeks to the day. And of course, you were supposed to draw work compensation. Of course, then it didn't amount to a great deal, because all of the years that I worked for that outfit, I can tell you that I drew $24.35 work compensation, that's all. And I got twice late for work in 37 years. And when I left there, it had been so long since I'd missed a day's work for being sick. I couldn't even remember how long it had been. Probably more than 25 years. And of course, and I still remember the things that caused it one time, and that's when I was in West Texas, and I was driving 14 miles to work in the winter time. Is in December, and I had a flat tire, and of course it was cold, it was sleet, and it was really cold. It was just about zero, and I got out to change the tire, and luck of the habit, just about the time that I got the wheel loose, the thing jumped off the jack, and I had to redo it, so I was 12 minutes late. Another time after I came here, and I had to family sickness, and they were in Thomas, of course, it didn't even there anymore. Thomas Memorial Hospital in Beaver. And I spent the night up at the hospital, and I was just a little bit late leaving, and of course, when I came back here, and of course, I'd been up all night, and I came back here and grabbed a bite of breakfast, and fixed a little lunch, and left, and went to the lease, and I was 10 minutes late getting there. You know, one of those good nights all the years of work for the family.
Tell me, what were the road conditions?
And the road conditions?
Say 35 when you first got here.
There wasn't any. No, there wasn't any. The only pavement there was in this was a little street on that street over there, that next street over there. And that two cars couldn't even pass on it because if you ever been to that around that old Taft Highway, you know, if you go
over there. Yes, the old Taft
Highway. Yeah, well, now that highway out there. It just felt like that whenever I came here. And it was rough. It was rough as could be, and two cars couldn't even pass on the one or the other had to get off the going down there, it was a road south from Moore's Drugstore, you know, down that way. And of course, in the
towards town.
See, you're going south
towards Odom.
You have toward Odom, and well, you just had to creep down there because there's holes in the street that you could bury your dog. And I'll tell you, in most of these places, of course, the houses were old, and a lot of them were dilapidated, and the yard were all. You know what blood weeds are? They're weeds that grow about 12 or 14 feet high. They're huge. Of course, you don't see any of them around here now, but of course, in the wilds along the creeks and places like that, you might see a few. But at any rate, most of these yards just growed up with them when I came here, and they just had little pig trails, you know, little goat trails around through the yard. And about the only part of the house you could see from would be from the top of the windows up, because you couldn't even see the windows because the weeds were too tall.
Yes.
And it was really run down. And it rained, and it was mud. And of course, and there this fellow that I've got, this engineer, and of course, in the Wilder Ranch, that's where their production is. And of course, they also have some production at East White Point, this side of Fort. And he and I, and we had a fellow. He's dead too. He sure was a good old man. His name was LaCordio Adams. Did you know him?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yes,
I like him. And LaCordio had lived here for years, and he knew the country, and he knew the people, and we kept him from that. We wouldn't leave him. And we surveyed that lease from the railroad track to the bay. We were about 3.5 years to complete that survey. When we finished over there, we came on this side, and we went almost to Skid Row, where we went to Fat Load Creek. That's where we went to see. And then we completed that. And then when we finished that, and another engineer came here. And of course, this engineer that I work with all the time, and they made him production superintendent. They got that Phil White Point, and they needed that other man. And of course, and he was familiar with the deal, and he went over there. He got killed. He was killed the 30th day of July in 1939. And there was a Sudville Road. Sudville Road.
Yes,
and you go straight through. And then you come to a dead end road out there. One goes to right to Odom, and one goes to left to go to White Point. There were some people having, and of course, he was going to lease. It was about 4 o'clock in the morning, and it was, of course, in the summertime, and it was just a little bit foggy, see, and he drove pretty fast anyway. And there was a truck right at the end of that road, almost at the end, and it sat right in the middle. He hit the back of that truck, and of course, in the car rolled over in the field. It killed him, I guess, instantly because it broke his neck and buggered his legs. He probably never knew what hit him. There was a man named King, Randy King. He lives here now. He has an office right down there. And Randy King is the man that took his place. Yeah. And
what was that other fellow's name that got killed?
His name was Arthur Garland Stale. We called him A.G. because that was his initial. See, that's what we called him on that.
Mm-hmm.
But he sure was. He was a young man when he was killed. I believe he was either 39 or 40. He was a young man, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he was killed instantly. And Randy King taking his place. And Randy was achieving. And I think Randy worked, I believe, 27 years. And then he quit because he went on his own. Mm-hmm. And of course, he done a lot of surveys for a lot of people. He worked all over the country. And I don't guess that he does too much work now, because he's getting long, you know.
Yeah.
I imagine he's about, I believe Randy's about 70 what?
Yeah, he should be. I went to school with his son.
Sydney. Yeah, Sydney. And the Sydney's in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen, of course, I've known Sydney all of his life, I remember, because he was born in West Texas, and I've known him since he was a baby. But I haven't seen him in a long time. I don't imagine that I've seen him in probably 15 years or longer.
Yes.
Because I've stayed a long time. And of course, and that field, and of course, we didn't have any. Of course, all the roads that they got, I built them because I was, for years, I was in charge of the roads. And of course, and I've operated all kinds of machinery. That's about all I've ever done. And of course, I've had drift a truck, run a roustabout crew, just about anything that an ordinary man can do. And then I worked at the gasoline plant. I was there for, I spent about 7 years at the gasoline plant. And then they got me to go back to the production. So I went back to production, and then I stayed there until I left. And of course, their equipment, their machinery and things like that, and I was the operator. That's what I was doing whenever I left. And of course, and that's what I did. See, now I work for H&K.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't retire from, I retired from Marathon. I left there, but I didn't retire because I left the 1st of February 1970 in May. I went to work for H&K, and then I worked. They've helped a little because you're only for a long period of time. Well, you're only allowed to make $1,680, you know, before that it would affect you. And they finally raised it to $2,100. See, and of course that isn't very much because and they'll talk about people being on welfare and they want everybody to work. And then guys that are able and want to work, and then they won't let them because they got. And of course, you go and work, but you know what they'll do? When you make $2, they'll take one. Nobody's going to do that, you know, because you'd just be spinning your wheels. Since I left out there, 1970, well, I worked for H&K 1970, 71, 72. And working for them, the rain shut us down. See, because mm-hmm. we were doing a bunch of deep plowing out there for Pat Wilder Jr.'s ranch, and of course, it's rained, and we haven't done a thing in over 3 weeks. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And of course, it's all right because what makes it bad is for those men that have families. See, and some of those men have 4, 5, 6 children, and it costs a lot of money to feed those families. And I feel sorry for a lot of those men because I know a lot of them. I know a lot of those men. You wouldn't know if you could see it like I did when I came here, because it was really wild out there at that lease, because the only thing that you'd see was wildlife and wild steers, and occasionally you'd see a cowboy, see, because that's all, because there wasn't any buildings, there wasn't anything, and it just, there for a long period of time until the rain slacked off and we got to where that we could do something about roads and things like that. Well, we just wound around through the pasture the best we could to get out there. There's a lot of times it'd be noon before we'd get to the lease, and there'd be a lot of times it'd be after dark because we might be stuck for 3 or 4 hours at a time because one time that was I think that was in 1936. Yeah, in 1936 and 1937, and there, of course, he's dead too. There's another. Of course, he's got two sons live here.
Who's that?
Old man J.D. Holland. Gus Holland and J.D. Jr. J.D. Jr. lives at the ranch now, and Mr. Holland had some teams, and of course, and then they didn't. Well, you didn't have dozers and. Backhoes and things like that, and he had to use teams, see, and he had a team corral out at the lease, and for and one of those mule skinners would bring a team down there to the yard in the morning for us, and where we were going to work, well, we just put our tools, whatever we needed, on this wagon, and of course, and we'd just get on the wagon and go where we was going to work, see, and and there just a lot of the time that the wagon had bogged down in the mud so deep that the mules, and we'd have to help them, see, because we'd just get old wheels or get old wagon, and there'd be about maybe 12 or 15 of us, and because they did, and with just our tools, they couldn't pull the wagon because the mud is too deep. And another thing is I don't know how come that we didn't all die from pneumonia, because from the time we went out there, a lot of times until we came home, we'd be as wet as a rat, because it wouldn't be a dry. And my words, there's a lot of the times we'd be wading water halfway to our knees. And the mosquitoes, oh brother, the mosquitoes were like bees. I'll take you serious. And the rattlesnakes are so many you couldn't count them. There was there's no way to know how many days that we'd well, it just like there just wasn't it was it just seemed that there was no end to it, because there's a lot of days that we'd kill 15 and 18 rattlesnakes. It wasn't any problem at all. I just don't think that they could have, because you know, it'd be pretty tough.
I'll tell you, it's pretty hard for. I know you went through some hard times, but when they're starving to death, sometimes they change.
Yeah, but the thing of it is now, they're not going to starve, because no, they've gone. Right. No, that's the trouble, because I don't understand it, because it's just, it really is, things are really in a bad condition, because all of this business and, you know, the things has changed so much, and it seems that they just don't want to work. They just mm-hmm. don't want to, because and they just won't. And of course, just like we were, well, we had to work because we were trained to work, and we thought that's what that people were supposed to do. But it's different now, because they don't think that a lot of them don't think that they're supposed to, and they think more about the. Just get by, you know. It doesn't make it different, and they just don't seem to have any interest. That's what worries me, because and see, just like some of these young people, of course, and for that little girl of ours, we have a scholarship fund, and we give it to some needy student, someone that needs help, and we give a scholarship. It's of course, it doesn't amount to a great deal, $200. And if the first, at the start of the semester, well, we give $100, and then at midterm, well, we give them another $100. Mike Bryant got it this year, mm-hmm. and one that we are really proud of. And there's a little girl. Let's see, what is that? It isn't Gonzalez. It's I guess it's Emma Longoria.
Emma Longoria. I know the girl.
Well, Emma got the scholarship last year, and boy, she's just been good all the way, because she's worked hard, and she comes to see us all the time, and I don't know, it's about because she's at school, and we had a letter from her just before she left school, and she said that she'd see us before long, but I guess that she's been busy. But anyway, she's just worked hard all the way. Alice Gray. You know her? She's going to teach at Odom. She just finished this year at A&I. And she's going to teach. Yeah. And, she lives at the farm way out there. Mrs. Mm-hmm. Gray lives at the farm. And we only missed one. I tell you, that's a pretty... the thing of it is, the way we see it, if they're determined to go, well, we want to try to help them everywhere we can. See, that's what we do. And as far as whoever they are, regardless of their race, color, creed, origin, religion, anything, that doesn't make a difference, because they're all of us are just human beings. We're just all people. See, if you could get the whole if you get more people to understand things, it'd be a better place for all of us to live, because there's so much prejudice. See, because they think that because a person's skin's black, that they're just like I was talking to my wife, and there's a man who used to work for the company for a long time. His name is Monroe Nichols. He's a black man.
He's a policeman.
He's just as good as go, because I've known that black man for at least 30 years. He never harmed anyone in his life. He's as honest as the days are long, and he works all the time. He never bothered anybody black, and he's just as good as he can be. But there's people that think that those black, just like they do. You just can't imagine a thing like that. there's people that don't even think that a black man has a soul. Can you imagine a thing like that? Yeah, but a lot of them. And I hear them talk about things like that, and some of them think that the thing to do is to grind them up and make soap out of them. Now, can you imagine anything as ridiculous and as far out as that? And it's just out of this world. And I don't know. I just don't know. But as far as getting back to the kids' school, and I don't, let's see, let me think. I don't know. I don't think we've met one little girl. Her name is Mildred Deonda. And her father's a mechanic.
Yes, sir.
He used to work for Jackson Tractor. Well, little Mildred and Preston, she used to work for Surety Title. And that little girl of ours worked down there two seasons when she was out of school. And that little girl of ours trained Mildred in the job. And of course, we all liked her because she was such a nice little kid. And so she got some scholarship money. And she went down there to Delmar for a little while, and then she quit. And then she married an old boy. And of course, I said, well, really, I guess that, I don't know, but he probably pressured me into it. But anyway, married him, but they didn't live together very long. And then they separated, she got a divorce, and she piddled around for about 3 or 4 months, and then married him again. And then she had a little baby, and now they're separated, divorced again, and she's in San Antonio, and she did good, see? And she is the only one that we missed, because all the rest of those kids and last year, and a black girl got the scholarship. Her name was, let me see, you would probably know her. What's some of those people's names?
Trueheart.
Oh, Trueheart. Let's see. Was it
Duhart?
Duhart.
That's right.
Yeah. And let's see, what was her name?
I'm not sure. I know her younger brother.
Yeah, well, that girl. She got last year. And then in this time, Mike Bryant. You know Mike.
Yeah, I know Mike.
And he got it this time. And last year, little Emma. What is her name?
Emma Longoria.
Longoria, yeah. Uh-huh. And she sure is a fine kid.
She sure is.
Yeah, she really is.
Tell me something. When you first got here, you were saying something about the way the area, the country was, you know, many roads.
Well, it was really in a poor condition, and it was, of course, in 1935, well, things had just began to start to come back out of the Depression, see, because that Depression was really something, because you can't imagine what it was like, and then, you see, President Roosevelt was elected, and after he was elected, well, he started to move in things, and he really got to move fast. And of course, and he got these companies to cut the hours, working hours. Well, that made employment for more men, see. And of course, and then they created this whole REA, you know, and then he created this tree army. Let's see, what did they call that? We always call it the tree army.
CC camp. Yeah.
CC camp. CC. And of course, in that employed a lot of guys. And then that, things just gradually began to get better, you know. And that, but it was really because any number of these families here, and they were really in very poor circumstances, you know, financially. Because they just didn't have the money. There wasn't any. When President Roosevelt was elected, and he closed down the banks and had the examiners examine them, and the ones that were sound, and they reopened, and the ones that weren't, and they stayed closed. And of course, and so many people lost all of their life savings in those banks and everything, because otherwise, the company paid us in cash twice while those banks. Because you're up a place you get a check cash. It just gradually began to come back, and then, of course, in these, some of these farmers, and of course, they started spreading out, and they, you know, cultivating more land, and then, different I came here, and some of these ranchers and farmers and those people, they might have 50 or 60 people working there, be grubbing out those trees. And of course, and when the dozers came along and all of that heavy equipment, you know, and then they could clear it and deep flat and all that stuff. And I worked just like that out there. We got there's two big cats. We got one that pulls that plow, and it's one of the biggest sizes that they build. The thing costs about $135,000-$140,000, and you have to have that, because if I work that plow is about 12 feet wide, and of course it cuts to a point like that, and your plow is 15 inches deep, and you've got to have a lot of power to pull it back like that. Yeah. Oh, there you hear.
Tell me something. Was when you first got here, was cotton the main
thing? No. Of course they had a lot of cotton, but I tell you, there are just hundreds of acres of vegetables. Cabbage, lettuce, beets, carrots, lettuce, spinach. Just some of those fields as far as you could see. And vegetables. And they had vegetable sheds here. They had them robbed the town. They had them tied all over. And I don't know what happened, but for some reason, it just all of a sudden, and the market just went, there wasn't anything to it, because they couldn't. And sometimes when they get hurt and they couldn't even sell them, and they just fly off of acres after acres, onions, you know. And then about the time that World War II ended, well, they were a good price, the onions, because some of those men sold those onions in the field for $185 an acre and all that stuff, you know, because they really made love. And then for some reason, it just went off. I don't know. And then they turned to cotton and grain, of course, and they. When I came here, they didn't raise too much grain at the rate of cotton, but vegetables was the main thing. And it's just wherever you go, that's what it means. And especially in the wintertime, you know, all of those fields between here and Corpus, those ways, I would have in past, just vegetables as far as you could see. Yeah. And they had all kinds of vegetables and it was really pretty, because in the wintertime, you know, and see all those green vegetables growing. And of course, it rained a lot, but I don't think it was as cold then as it is now, because I know that the first winter that I was there, of course, most people thought I was crazy because, I climbed into West Texas, see, and my blood is thick, and I could stand a lot of cold weather. And I came the first winter I was here, I never did even have a jacket on, because a lot of times that I went to work in a short sleeve shirt. These guys that live in, and they think I freeze to death. Well, it's just comfortable. But by the next year, by the time that I got climate here, and boy, when it's cold here, it's the coldest place in the world.
That's right.
It's colder than it is in Alaska when it's cold. But see, the thing of it is that you get used to those things. Yep.
You were telling me about that trial you saw. What was the name again? Henry Smith?
Henry Smith. He was a big fellow. If I can just see him now, he was a big fellow with a big pot, you know, he drank a lot of beer. And he's good. And of course, and I do work. I thought I'd think about it before all the rain. And I do a lot of work for Richard Cave, for Texaco. Last year, it didn't work for anybody else but Texaco and Marathon. And between Odom and Edroy, Texaco's got a lot of production out there. Of course, they've got some, they call it Plymouth Field. It's out there world of rain. In fact, Texaco now, I'm sure, has more production than anybody in this county because of Marathon's production from all of it. But at any rate, what I start taking up in respect, and he had a nice farm out there between Odom and Edroy. And of course, and I've done some work on the lease. And that W.A. Smith, that's a sign from the Wells. I guess his name is Henry Andrew. I don't know what he's been.
your daily work schedule when you pulled in? Say, before the depression, what was your schedule like? How many hours a week did you work? And that type of
well, thing? There was, when I started working at the company,
35. So
I started working at the company in 1933. Mm-hmm. I started working at the company the first day of July, 1933. And the difference now than then, and of course, when I worked for the company, started working for the company, and they paid us $3.50 a day. That's what we got. And we worked 9 hours. And when I left the company, I made, about 50, 60, 75 cents. I made that more than 60 cents an hour, more than a day for a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When I left the company, and at the time, because I made $4, I said, at a nickel an hour. And when I started work for them, I made $3.50. But the thing of it is, there's a lot of difference there. And when I came here, for the building right beside the Urban Renewal Office, there's a grocery store.
Warden Crowe.
And you could go down to Ward Crowe and you could get us some 2 week supply groceries. You wouldn't hardly have room to haul them in the car, and you could never cost you more than $10.
Yeah,
about ten. Because you got $10 for 2 weeks to live.
Yeah,
and my work, you can go to Food Price now, and you would get two little. You could get out of there two little bags that big for $10.
that's the difference.
Yeah,
it sure is.
It's just so much different because and I don't know when this thing will stop. I don't have any idea. I guess nobody knows because, but it'll have to stop one of these days because it just can't. Because I think eventually everything reaches its climax, and when it does, it just has to do so. There's something that has to happen because, but there's one. I'm sure hoping and praying that we don't ever get into a mess like it did in the early 30s because I see the stock market price. The bottom fell out of everything because, and there wasn't any money. See, there just wasn't any because you couldn't get any. And the thing, and another thing, the difference now, or then and now, because see, when the depression in 49, when the stock market crashed, everything went to pop. Well, by work, we only had about 130 million people. Now we've got more than 200 people.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see what a difference it would be, because I'll tell you for sure, it would really be something. But it was really bad, I'll tell you for sure, because you just can't imagine what it was like. Well, of course, a man, you weren't old enough to know, and I'm glad that you don't. But there's a lot of these people, these younger people, and if you tell them, they just don't think it could be possible for it to be that bad. But I'm telling you, that's the way it was. There's no question about it. Because I tell you what, when I went to the work for the company in West Texas, and Curtis found family lived in Oklahoma. My father and mother both passed away in Oklahoma. Lived in Holdenville, Oklahoma. One of the sisters had a boy about, he was about 12. And the first trip, I just want you to listen to that. It was the first trip that I made to Oklahoma after I went to West Texas. And that nephew of mine he was going to FHA. And of course, he wanted to get some pigs and things like that. And I went over there. And he was talking to me, and I told him, I think that that's great, Billy. He said that. His name's Bill. And he said that. He said that his daddy told him that he had to buy him some pigs just as soon as he got the money. And I said, how many pigs did you think that you're like? He said, I'd like to have two. And I said, could you manage four? And he said, yeah, he said, I could manage them. And of course, and I know where there was a hog ranch south of town, about 10, 15 miles south of town. And I said, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. Tomorrow in the morning, we'll just go and these people that run the hog ranch and then get them. I told him, we'll just go to Gillum's hog ranch and we'll get you some pigs if they'll deliver. And he said, I said, sure. I mean, we went together. I guess they had about 300, you know, and they had ball sizes. And about four of those things. And I imagine it was about 30 pounds a piece. You know how much you paid for them? 50 cents a piece. That's how much paid for them. Yeah. And of course, and they delivered them. Yeah. And that kid won the prize on those two of those things. Of course, I think that he let one of those other kids have two of them, and he kept two, and he won the first prize on those sticks in their deal in the fall. Yeah.
You about a pork chop for 50 cents nowadays.
Yeah. and the size of the world.
Yes, it really is. Tell me, do you remember, did they have telephones here at that time?
Yeah.
1935.
Yeah, they had, of course they didn't have telephones as many as they did. There was a lot of people that didn't have a telephone, but there was, there's quite a few scattered around, but everyone didn't have a telephone. And, of course, and I don't guess that there's anyone, any place anymore that didn't have a telephone, but they didn't have it. And of course, they had radios. Most of them had radios, and they had their small radios because they, most of them, they couldn't afford them to get a big one. You know, they just had to get a cheaper one. Mm-hmm. And now it was really something out here. And another thing is, in the Corpus, going into Corpus, the tank, and there was an old shaggly rattly causeway that went across there. And you're almost afraid to cross the thing because you're afraid to fall through. Because old boards is loose and they're rattling bang. It's really something. And then they, that little old, they had a little old pavement going down there. And it, of course, and it was just a bottleneck, the traffic in that old bascule bridge. I tell you, I spent as much as an hour and 45 minutes waiting to get across that old bascule bridge that they used there. I think that one of the biggest improvements that ever happened in any city is when they got that harbor bridge, that high bridge over there, because it just breezes through the Corpus now, but my word is in that. And another thing is, and when I came here, that Highway 9 was brand new, it wasn't even finished, see, because I know that the first two or three trips that I made to Corpus when I came here, and I went by Otis down that way, and of course, and they had that barricades along, and you had to go down the ditch, down the garbage, you know, and they were working the road. They were just big. And this Highway 77, it wasn't completed. They were still working on this Highway 77, going to Refugio when I came here. And let's see, I think that they completely redone it three times since I've been here. Yeah, but, I imagine it, with this heavy traffic that they have, it won't be too long till they'll be redoing it again. Those trucks,
boy. Do you remember that bridge over the Nueces River on the other side of Odom there? Do you remember if it was built at that time? I know there was a two-way bridge there for a while.
Yeah, but for a long period of time. It's just a two-way bridge. That old bridge was gathered there because the very time I remember, distinctly remember the first time we went to Corpus and across the bridge. If you drive careful, well, two cars could go by. Yeah, but you better be on the ball because you didn't have a lot of room to play around.
That's right.
Because it hasn't been too many years since they put that other bridge across there. They had four-way traffic. I guess that's how long has that been? I don't guess it's 15. I guess 18, probably 18, 20 years maybe. I don't think it's been that long.
Something like that. I don't remember. 13. I think they had it before I left, and that was about. I went to California in 1960.
Yeah.
Tell me something. What are your opinions? I know that the oil industry has always been very prevalent. I mean, you know, this is about the only industry we've had here, and it's coming to an end now. It seems.
Well, it is. I tell you, there's oil production here for several more years because those companies, and they still have some good wells, but not worth. It's just almost unbelievable how much it's dropped in the last three or four years, Steve, because I tell you, I get a magazine from the company. It's called Marathon Messenger, Steve, and it tells about their operations and their activities. And you think about it, you wonder a lot of times how companies could afford things like that. And you see, well, it was effective this March the 1st that they weren't, these companies aren't allowed to put any salt water or any brine of any description into creeks or streams because it has to go back into the ground. Well, you have to have a salt water injection system. Well, Marathon has one, Texaco has one, and I just would have always been 2 months ago. And I've read in it last year that Marathon spent more than $500,000 on that salt water injection, and their total production on that lease out there, world lease, their leases go in alphabetical form. See, there's a C lease, an A lease, and the A's, B and C, you go like that. And of course they have the C lease, and the E lease is on the refuge. See, that's on the wildlife refuge. And then they have the F lease, and that's on the refuge too. And of course in the A lease, and the B lease, and the I lease, and they're right up there with the ranch house. And of course the I lease is up in the St. Paul area. It's on the right hand side of the highway, but they don't have much production up there. But at any rate, the factory said that their total production is the sea lease, and in fact, out in that area, and it's 1,200 barrels a day, and it cost them $500,000 for that injection system, and they put it back in the ground. And Texaco, of course, I guess, well, Texaco probably spent that much money, or both, see, and that. But what those companies do, well, to tell you the truth, what that field that Yeats pulled at IRM, that's what made people high. Because the thing's been on belt for years. Well, that gave them money to spread out. And of course, and they have production in several of those foreign countries. And they, in Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, they got a tremendous amount of production. And it's a shame that they can't get, of course, that's politics, so that's what it amounts to. That 800-mile pipeline, so they could get that out there, because Exxon, Humble, and they built that big ship, that SS Manhattan, and they thought that they could get that out there, but they made a trip up there. They brought one barrel of crude oil back from Prudhoe Bay, and that SS Manhattan is over here at Harbor Island about 50 years ago. We were over there, kid, boy, it was beautiful, it really fun. But I guess they decided that. That they could do that. But if they, I don't know why that they can't come to some terms, because I don't think, of course, there's so much protest and there's so much politics and all of that stuff, but I think that they will eventually build it. But and they holler about this fuel shortage. Well, that would really relieve a lot of it. And see, if they build that oil line, well, they'll have to build a gas line right along this side of it. And of course, it'll cost a tremendous amount of money. And it'll take them 3 to 5 years but when they start to build it, because it's a 48-inch line and it's 800 miles long. It'll cost more than $1 million a mile to build it. But if they do that, if they could get that through, and there's a fella that works for the company, his name's Bill Thompson, and he's a professional photographer. He's one of the best, I'll get you, because he's been in that business for years. And he's retired from the company. He took early retirement. He worked for the company for years. He lived in Denver. And as a rule, most of the time, the last 7 or 8 years, and he spent the summer in Alaska. And he makes pictures for different outfits, you know. And he came back here, sometime last year, sometime in the summer. But he came by and stopped the business, and he spent the noon hour with us that night. And he told me that some of those contractors, and they moved a tremendous amount of heavy equipment in there, they go broke. They don't even wait. They wanted to be there on the ground floor for this job. And that, well, so far it never has materialized. And he says that they've even got some of the pipe stacked up there. And he says it's just rusted pieces because it's going hot. And some of those contractors are broke. They don't even have the money to get that equipment out there. It's all. It sure is. And
And St. Marathon's got a lot of production over there. Of course, they've got a tremendous amount of production. But that deal out there with Texas, that Yates Pool, that's what made them. Because another thing is, too, there's a well in Texas. It's numbered, it's saturated number what? It's been producing, well, the, let's see, on the 11th, it's June, I believe it's on the 11th. And the Chamber of Commerce put on a celebration in Big Lake